Nice, and it's true. So I will talk about so to say orientifold compactifications, and what are the kind of the model building tools within these compactifications, and it will be mainly based on this one paper which appeared last fall with Ralf Blumenhagen, Volker Braun, and Timo Weigand. Timo is also here. And then some of the mathematical tools or from another context was also considered in this paper from last summer with Albrecht Klemm. Okay. Since we already heard the talk by Sakura, I will only start with a very brief introduction and motivation. So, well, I mean, you can ask the question: in which way can we study realistic gauge theories and matter interactions in type 2B string theory with intersecting seven brains? And so there are many attempts in doing that. So starting with local models for the MSSM. Or some torus compactifications or similar things. And one example which will be of course of interest for this talk is are the SU5 gut theories. So we want to ask the question, how can we embed SU5 gut theories in type 2B string compactification? So let me quickly give you a motivation why gut theories are nice. Probably you all know this, but just for completeness. Well, first of all, if you look at the representations of SU5 and you split them into the standard model representations, you precisely find the particles which you would want to get for the standard model. Okay, so you find the gauge fields, all the gauge interactions, then you find the quarks, leptons, and neutrinos, and in addition from like the fives, you also find Higgs doublets. In addition, there are some states which we don't want, so these vector-like states here, and then also the three ones. Okay, but at least within this set of representations, we precisely find the particle content of the MSSM. And of course, the other thing is, we know that the MSSM couplings unify very nicely, and this is a very good motivation to consider gut models. In gut models, of course, there is a unification naturally at the gut scale. Okay. At least in four-dimensional guts and higher-dimensional guts, there can be issues and which have to be addressed. Okay. So now I can come back to the talk or the review talk by Sakura. Namely, recently there was much progress in realizing gut models in local F-theory constructions on intersecting seven brains. So with this here, I don't mean only D brains, but really more general seven brains, and basically these two papers worked out quite a few of these details of these model building tools, and then later on also supersymmetry breaking was addressed and so on in these works. Okay. Let me say a few words about F-theory. Well, what is different? Well, F-theory is not a fundamental theory as M-theory is, but F-theory is nothing else but type 2B string theory with a varying dilaton. So the dilaton axion can now vary over the internal space, and this would correspond to like we have an underlying 12-dimensional theory compactified on an elliptically fibered Calabi-Yau fold, where the torus fiber is the dilaton. Okay. In these cases, one can actually get strong coupling enhancements of the gauge groups to exceptional groups we heard about this, and this is a this can be very useful in gut model construction. And there are various new insights for models for which gravity can be decoupled. So one of the paradigms for these local gut models is that you can decouple gravity. So that's basically the main assumption, and remarkably this gives quite a constrained setup. Okay, and this constraint setup is then exploited and checked what can we learn nevertheless about physics, but about gut model physics. But then we start basically from a bottom-up approach, right? We put many things in which we want to have. So for example, there is a new mechanism to break the gut group on these seven brains. Okay. However, if you look a little bit at this mechanism to break the gut group, you notice that, well, this is actually not a local mechanism, right? This mechanism basically forces us to study how the seven brains sits inside the compact geometry and how it sees the compact geometry, as we will see in a moment, okay? So actually it needs some global knowledge, okay? The obvious thing is we cannot address global constraints. They might be very restrictive. It could be the case that these models can never be embedded. There might be some constraints which we have overlooked. And of course, things like we cannot address moduli stabilization, because moduli, we just choose them where we want to have them. They are not dynamical in these setups. Okay. And the other thing which I didn't list it here is, well, we also have to understand if these gut groups are really, you can really decouple them from all the stuff which is beyond the gut scale, so to say, right? I mean, there could well be, there is a chance that they could be in a swarm plan, right? Okay, so what would be the canonical step to do? Well, just construct compact scenarios with Calabi-Yau fourfold, embed these models into a compact fourfold, and just proceed and check if everything works out, check if the constraints are satisfied. However, it turns out to be that this is actually very hard. Okay, so what we did is, of course, not forgetting that, of course, this is essentially then what one wants to have. But one can learn a lot already about what constraints are present and how far can we go by working at the weak coupling limit, so at the weak string coupling regime, but compact setups. Okay. So what we considered are guts in type to be Calabi-Yau orientifolds. And you know, sense orientifold limit can bring you from an F-theory compactification to a type to be orientifold setup. And the seven brains in the F-theory become orientifold planes, O7 planes, and D7 brains. Okay. So in this talk, I first want to give you some details on the effective action, so on the model building techniques with the seven brains with gauge flux, and then just address the consistency conditions which we have to satisfy in a compact scenario. Okay. In the second part, I apply this to SU5 guts. So I ask the question, how does the precise setup look like which we want to essentially construct? And I will talk about the hypercharge flux which is used to break the gut group to the standard model, and I will tell you that this has something to do with the global geometry of this internal space. And in the third part, I will become a little bit more concrete and will also give you more precise examples which we considered. Namely, we considered guts on the Pezzo transitions of the quintic hypersurface and guts on transitions of this degree 18 hypersurface in P1169. So I will, if you don't know what this is precisely, I will explain it in a little bit more detail. Okay, so let us start. So first thing we have to do is we have to have a closer look at type 2B oriented faults with O3 and O7 planes. So then we know we can construct them by modding out type 2B string theory by the following symmetry. So you have the world sheet parity, some left FL is the left moving fermion number in space time, and then we have some sigma, which is a holomorphic isometry of the internal manifold. So we take a Calabi-Yau manifold, compactify type 2 strings on it, and we mod out this symmetry. Okay, then we know in general that the cohomology classes will split into plus and minus eigenspaces under the symmetry. Okay, so actually it's holomorphic, so we also preserve the PQ splitting. Okay, and now we can very elegantly determine what is the four-dimensional spectrum by performing a Kaluza-Klein reduction of this linear combination. Okay, so let me explain in a few words what this consists here. So first of all, I look in the Kähler deformation sector, which was in n equals 2 the quaternionic space. Okay, I form this combination here. So these are the Ramond-Ramond forms. So we have 0 form, 2 form, and 4 form in type 2B. J is the Kähler form of this Calabi-Yau manifold. Phi is the dilaton, and B is the NSB field. So what you see is that the NS fields get holomorphically combined with the Ramond-Ramond fields. Okay, and in order to perform the Kaluza-Klein reduction, I now take a basis of the following groups here. So you see the sign is always alternating, so it's plus for 0 and minus for 2 and plus for 4. Okay, and then you just expand this even form in this basis. And what you find is the dilaton here, then some fields G which contain the B field, and some T which contain the cycle of the four, the size of the four cycles. Okay? And in fact, one can very generally determine the Kähler potential, which takes this nice form. Okay? And, well, I mean, there are two things which I want to say to this. First thing is, now you have to express the Kähler potential in terms of these coordinates. And this is something like the entropy here, and if you check, well, this is precisely what you would have to do in order to evaluate the entropy in terms of the charges. Okay. The second thing which you should observe is that this Kähler potential does not depend on the Ramond-Ramond fields. Okay. So it's independent of the Ramond-Ramond axions, and as we will see in a moment, these Ramond axions can now become gauged by in the presence of the 7 brain, and we can easily compute the D term if we know the killing vectors of these gauged isometries. So what we do next is we place one or many of these D7 brains in this compact Calabi-Yau manifold. Okay. So we consider the Calabi-Yau Y with these 7 brains. Namely, we will wrap NA, a stack of NA of them, over a SUSY 4 cycle, over a 4 cycle in the manifold, which we choose to be supersymmetric in the background. And of course, you know, if this is away from the orientifold plane, this will give you an UN gauge group and preserve N equals 1 supersymmetry. Okay. The next crucial thing which we will need is that the 7 brains can carry a gauge flux. Okay, so we can switch on a gauge flux in this UN, and in the following we will restrict to U1 to line bundles. Okay, so the general form which we now use to expand the flux is basically here we have like just the identity matrix and then some traceless generators, and so these are our line bundles which we switch on this D7 brain. Okay, and in general we can also combine the B field into the field strings because you know it always appears in this combined combination. Okay, So now line bundles can be are fully characterized by the first their first chain classes, and well, these can be just identified in this way, and here it's just a shifted first chain class by the B field for this generator which has a trace. Okay. And what does that what do these line bundles do? Well, first of all, the L0, so the part which has a trace, it splits after a U1 factor, and we get SUN times U1. Okay? And further line bundles can break this SUN further and split up further U1 factors. Okay. Now we can come back to the D terms, which I mentioned already before. Namely, this gauge flux might induce a gauging of the bulk scalars, which I had on my first slide, or one of my first slides. Okay. And now you can sit down, you can compute the D-term, and what you find is that it has this specific form. So you have here the Kähler form, pullback of the Kähler form, the zero component of the flux, and the B-field. So in fact, the first factor comes from a gauging of these T-scalars, and the second from a gauging of these G-scalars. Okay. However, from this expression you notice something, namely, this D-term is there or not there, depending on the fact whether or not this F is trivial or non-trivial in the Calabi-Yau. So F will always be non-trivial on this surface where the brain is wrapped, but it can be non-trivial or trivial in the Calabi-Yau. In the non-trivial case, you see the integral doesn't vanish here, and there will be a Green-Schwarz mechanism, and we will have a massive U1, and this U1 will be gone from the light spectrum. But for the trivial parts, these trivial parts do not couple to the bulk scalars, at least at large volume, and we have a massless U1. And that's, of course, what we want to later use to get the U1 in the standard model. Okay. The second thing which one has to consider is the supersymmetry conditions from F term, and they come from a superpotential of this form, where this is a chain integral over a 4-chain ending on this 7-brain, over a 5-chain ending on the 7-brain. Okay. And this can be obtained from Witten's holomorphic Chern-Simons action, or what we now found is these can be also determined by dimensional reduction in the same spirit as done for the D7 brain, if one keeps non-dynamical three forms in the spectrum. Okay, but that's just an aside, this is not.
So that's a superpotential for open string moduli?
This is a superpotential.
Omega is a usual 3-zero form?
Yes, that's true. So it's also for open string moduli, but this is of course hidden in the fact that there's here kind of a pullback involved, right? And it depends on the complex structure moduli. In these local models, you basically always demand that it is 2-0 or something like this is 0.
Basically, you use that to fix the open string moduli.
Not in our cases, because I will restrict to cases where I don't have open string moduli for the D7 brands. But in principle, you can do when people study that in detail. So now we combine both things, and we note that, well, if I have a D brain, I also have to have an image D brain in these orientifold setups, and that these bundles get mapped to an image bundle on the image brain. So in general, you have such a configuration, a U1 brain, a UN brain, and UN prime brain, and they can even intersect over the orientifold plane in some curve. Okay. So putting these two things together, we now get the consistency conditions. And these consistency conditions basically come from brain charges in every codimension. So the first thing is we have to look at codimension one, complex codimension one of the Calabi-Yau manifold. In this codimension, our space sees the 7 brains and the O7 planes. Okay, and well, now we can work out the charges, and then we notice that the tadpole cancellation condition for the seven brains are simply that the number n of the D7 brains has to cancel eight charges from the O7 planes. So if we determine the devices on which these brains and orientifold planes live, we can check whether or not these conditions are satisfied. The second thing is, which is a very important thing, there can be induced lower charges, and also there can be induced D5 tadpole charges, even though there is no O5 orientifold plane. So on a D7 brain, with a flux, with this gauge flux, there is generally a D5 charge induced from these combinations, and we have to make sure that on every element of this cohomology class here, 2-, the minus is important here, this combination vanishes. That's another non-trivial constraint, and in our explicit models, this is rather restricted. Okay. And finally, the more well-known constraint from the D3 tadpole is that, well, the gravitational charges, D3 charges on the D7 planes and O7 planes, which are measured by Euler characteristics of these planes, has to match this combination, including the gauge flux, the flux in the background, and the D3 charges.
Is that the
well, I just, in order to not write down this explicit expression, in F theory this would correspond to the Euler characteristic of the fourfold. Okay.
But are you sure that your model can be really lifted to traps?
No, this is so to say, well, this is more a cryptic, this is a privation. It's basically the statement that here are the charges which would correspond to the Calabi-Yau fourfold, and I can write down the explicit expression in terms of the Euler characteristics of these Euler numbers of these D7 and O7 planes. Okay. So for lift for models, this would be just. Let me make a few remarks which one has to consider if one wants to actually look at such models. First of all, also here we will now see the trivial cycles. So that's something which one has to take into account. Even so, something is trivial in the Calabi-Yau and non-trivial on the brain, it will contribute to the tadpole cancellation condition. Okay, and one should take this into account, and this will of course make it even harder to satisfy all the constraints, right? And the second thing is that we can also switch on discrete B fields, which also contribute to the tadpole condition. Then there are additional conditions if we have fluxes in a compact setup, namely that fluxes are quantized, okay? And well, in general this would correspond to some K-theory constraints, which I don't want to discuss in more detail here. But there's also another thing which is important here, namely there's an anomaly induced, okay? And this basically comes from transporting open strings around the brain, and it's known as the Fried-Witten anomaly, and it gives the quantization conditions on the fluxes on the brains, okay? Namely, that it's not just the fact that these Fs have to be quantized in integer cohomology, cohomology, but that also it plays a role on which kind of D-brain or on which kind of divisor these fluxes live. Okay, so the first Chion class of this canonical class of the divisor will enter here with a factor 1/2. And this implies that if this divisor is non-spin, as it will be for our examples, namely for these Del Pezzo surfaces, this is an integer, and this F can be half-integer quantized, okay? Or has to be even half-integer quantized in order that this is an integer, okay? So that's a very restrictive constraint, and is actually important to take this constraint into account also in these local models. Okay. And the other thing, the other constraint is the deed term constraint. I mentioned already there will be a deed terms for non-trivial fluxes. And in a global model, we can check whether or not we can satisfy this constraint inside the Kähler cone, where all volumes are physical. Okay, having discussed the constraints, and we have already seen the bulk spectrum, the next question we have to answer is, what is the spectrum from the open string sector? Okay, and now we know that, well, at least roughly, this can be obtained by computing the Hodge numbers of the divisor on which these seven brains live. So these divisors, in principle, can move in this Calabi-Yau. So the D7 brain can move in the Calabi-Yau. So there will be deformations of the brain. They will be determined by the number of normal vector fields to it, holomorphic normal vector fields, and they can be mapped to H20 on the brain, okay, by the holomorphic 304. So these are the number of deformations, and then of course if our 4-cycle has some non-trivial loops in there, we can also wrap Wilson lines around it, and we have Wilson line moduli coming from H10 of this divisor. Okay. However, they are both absent if we now restrict to specific cycles, namely to these Dipezzo surfaces. Okay. The second and very important part of the spectrum is the chirospectrum, which comes from the fact that we can intersect D brains, and strings which end on one brain to the other brain can become light. Okay, and these bifundamental representations can also be computed by an index. Okay, so basically strings starting on a brain wrapped on DA and ending on a brain wrapped on DB can appear in the bifundamental representation, and these will be our metafields of the gut theory, and it's obtained from the first Chern classes in this fashion. And there are, of course, not also additional states which then are not chiral necessary, but we can also compute them by general formulas. Okay, so these are basically the things which we have to take into account, and now we have to implement that explicitly, first for the gut breaking and then explicitly in compact Calabi-Yau manifolds. Okay, so let us first discuss how such a gut model ideally looks like. So this we heard already a little bit, but now let me tell you from the brain perspective a similar story. Okay, so you can imagine the following. You first take 12 D7 brains, put it on an O7 plane. Okay, so this is just now to picture the thing. It's not actually how you do it in the construction. Okay, what you get is an SO12 gauge group on this O7 plane. So the first thing you do is you move off 5 brains from this O7 planes. Okay. You do that in such a way that they still intersect the O7 plane, so you remove 5, and since it's an orientifold plane, you have an image of 5 as well. Okay. Well, and now on this plane, there is not anymore an SO group, but a U5 group. Okay. Well, what we are left with is 5D7, image 5D7, and we have still two brains here. The next thing we do is we remove also these two brains. So we remove one and then its image. And we do that in such a way that they intersect our gut brain. And now if you just turn your head appropriately, then you see the picture which also Sakura was drawing, but in another dimension. So these are now the 4 cycles. Okay, these are the intersections of the 4 cycles, which are always Riemann surfaces, and Well, the groups you can just see, you have U1, U5, and the appropriate intersections. Okay. The next thing we do is we switch on fluxes on this D7 brain, and these fluxes will break our U5 into SU5 times U1, this gut flux. Okay. And now we can think back that we started with SO12, and we can decompose SO12 into the representations of SU5 times U1. U1 was this U1 here, and U1b is the U1 which is from this brain. And then you find precisely this decomposition, and these are exactly the particles, the representations which I had in our for this Georgi Klaschau gut model.
In SO10 unification, normally the standard model matter comes from the spinner representation.
Yeah.
But here you're getting it from the adjoint. Is that?
That's true.
The models are built like that. I just don't remember.
Say again the last
models where the matter comes from the adjoint rather than the spinner of an SO group.
Well, I mean, here it's basically just the statement that these fit into this representation. I mean, at the end of the day, you will see that these representations come from these intersections. Anyway, they just unify very nicely in this.
It's not a real gut, you're saying, but
it's not really.
It's not a field theory gut.
Yeah. It's a higher dimensional gut which lives on.
I just always thought matter comes from spinner, but that's not.
That's not what's happening here. Yeah, in the SO5, it's also not true.
You need some sort of parameter, so you cannot do it that way in the gut. So you need a parallel
representation. That's why you can't do it in field theory.
But here you have that the higher dimensional theory is chiral, and that can use chiral.
Yeah. So it's. Yeah, that's what I meant by saying that that's not really how you do it by moving off this brain, but that's how you see that it very nicely fits.
Start to decompose the adjoint of E8 and look what representations you have, and then you put bundles.
Yeah,
and you do the same as this SO32 heteronic.
It's not an SO12 cut, that's certainly true. Okay, now let me make it a little bit more concrete. It fits also very nice, so to say, to this discussion. Now, well, where do the representations precisely come from? Well, the 10 comes from the intersection of the gut brain with each image over the orientifold plane. And now we can go back to this enhancement story. So here it will be SO10 enhancement. And then the 5s come from these intersections, 5. The 5 bar and the 5 Higgses, and then here the neutrinos we can even get from this intersection. So this is the model which is very nice. And the next thing we can ask for is, now we constructed this gut with the matter coming from intersecting brains, and now we can ask the question, how do we break the gut group? And I mentioned this already a few times. The way how it was suggested in this work in the gut model context was use an element of H2 of the gut divisor which is trivial in the gut in the Calabi-Yau manifold, and then there is no axion which can render this U1 massive, well, at least lowest Kaluza-Klein modes, which can render this U1 massive, okay, and use this U1 as the U1 here, this U1Y, U1 hypercharge of the MSSM. So this will split off this U1 factor, but this U1 factor will not get massive, okay. However, it turns out if you want to do that explicitly, it's not that simple. You cannot just switch on some trivial flux and everything works fine. Why is it not so simple? Because we have these constraints, and this one constraint is the Fried-Witten anomaly. Okay, and what one finds is, if you want to have the right embedding to get the right charges on the U1y of the fields, and we have a brain on this divisor which is non-spin, okay, in these fluxes there will be this contribution, and this contribution will be integer. So C1 of this divisor will be integer. And so the thing which has to appear in front has to be half integer in order that it's properly quantized. Okay. So what one has to do is one has to use this additional U1 here and actually twist it into the game in order to satisfy this Friedwitten anomaly. Okay, so this is the explicit formula, but the strategy is clear. So you cannot just use the Ly bundle to obtain to obey the Friedwitten anomaly. Okay. So this is the gut model which we want to have in our compact scenario, and now. One crucial thing, if we are sticking with the breaking of the gut group, is we now want to check that not all elements here in this space are non-trivial in Y, okay? Because we want to switch on this hypercharge, okay? And now there are different ways to do that. So let me start with a slightly overkill way to do that. What we can do is we can compute the BPS number and just count how many curves are in a certain cohomology class. So if you know that there are so and so many curves, you know that they are all in the same cohomology class, and they will see only one of them will be non-trivial in the Calabria. Okay. Another way for these examples which we considered is if you have examples obtained by fourfold by transitions, where you basically generate del Pezzos in your manifold, this will be guaranteed that this happens, or it will be usually the case that this happens, that there are cycles which are trivial in the Calabria. Okay. So far we had the breaking of the gut flux down. Let me mention one further issue in this gut model construction before I move on to the explicit examples, namely, and this we already heard before, is the presence of this one Yukawa coupling. Okay, so this is an issue which is probably the biggest issue to address here, and it's essentially it's nearly the only issue which you cannot discuss so easily in this D-brain setup. And most of the other things you can fully address in the D-brain picture of these constructions, of these local constructions. Namely this generation, and here we see the U1 charges, which I also had before, and you see it's forbidden perturbatively. However, in this paper here, it was suggested that it can be generated by non-perturbative effects, because we know non-perturbative effects are allowed to violate this perturbative shift symmetries, and one can check what are the conditions that such an instanton is allowed. So this is like an example of these superpotential computations where one asks what are necessary conditions that such a thing is there. And we know that, for example, from the instanton, the pure instanton corrections, where the holomorphic Euler characteristic has to be one, and so on. So there are all kinds of such statements of when can these instantons contribute. Okay.
What do you mean by weak coupling?
Weak coupling, weak string coupling. So this is, yeah, that's a good point. I mean, what I say here is that in this weakly coupled Orientifold models, okay, we can nevertheless have instantons which come from brains from E3 brains, D3 brains wrapped on four cycles which have small volume. Okay.
Question. Break down the large volume assumption that you had at the beginning, where you're using
this is super value. That's true. Yeah. It breaks down, and the question is, can you compute these corrections, or can you make an estimate of these corrections? Yeah. But it's an issue about this Yukawa coupling, this story. That's true. It's basically the story if these models can be fully realistic, having all the desired features. And the answer is, in principle, yes, but then you are driven to a regime where you have very little control over the system, right? So, and it's true, it's a drawback, and this you can see as the motivation to also look at the compact F-theory constructions. That's true. But nevertheless, it's a nice mechanism. It's also generated by non-perturbative effects.
But of course, you could also have additional couplings with some other fields which have like only one charges, but we don't have those fields. You know, like not a three-point coupling, but that it's really...
I think at least in the superpotential, these couplings are essentially the only ones you can think of in this context. I mean, it's true that in the Kähler potential and so on, all kinds of additional contribution, but here, because of holomorphicity and so on, this is pretty safe, that this is, so to say, the leading contributions, I believe.
So you want
to non-realize the
company and give the
advantage
to something else? Yeah.
That's what we plan.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, sometimes
I'm
sure
because
it
plans
as well.
Yeah. I mean,
it's not... Before you finish, sure. How do you know that it's actually 10 times 5 that you get and not something else? I mean, the instanton, in some sense, has to intersect these other intersection points.
Yeah, and this is precisely what one has to... These are the intersection numbers which one has to have in order to generate...
How do you know that you get matter and not the genus or some other stuff in the instanton?
The genus?
The instanton carries effective charge, and this can be cancelled by means of...
Yeah, but how do you know?
I mean, these charges...
How do you know it's 10 times 5 and not 5 to the fifth?
No, but these charges are fixed here, right? This were in the list before by how this decomposition works. So these are the fixed charges, and then you know that the instanton has a certain charge. So the invariant combination has a certain instanton with these couplings. Okay. So having set out what we want to look at, now we can ask. That's a beautiful story, and we have many ingredients, but we will never be able to realize it. Or is it actually the case that we can do that in a compact space? And the answer is, yes, you can. Yes, you can do it in a compact space. Okay. So, the first thing we want to do is, we now want to restrict our setup further, and we want to look at these seven brains on their Petzl surfaces. So there was a very clear motivation in the local F-theory construction. Namely, the Petzl surfaces are the only surfaces, non-singular surfaces, which can be shrunk to a point. It basically comes from the fact that they have positive curvature, and these can be shrunk to a point. So there are these 10 choices, and that's it. Okay. And these 10 choices are P1 times P1. That's not very nice for gut model building, so we will not consider this. Not much space on there. And there are the P2 blown up and N points, 0 to 8. Okay, so these are the Del Petzl surfaces.
Actually, that's interesting. It's the first time I've heard that about Del Petzl. I mean, they can only, I mean, if you try other surfaces, do you get unpleasant singularities? Or what does it mean you can only shrink these to a point? Can't it take any force surface and imagine the metric goes to sort of zero? Is it while preserving the Calabi-Yau condition or something around it?
Yeah. So the point is that if you take the Dalpetsa surface inside of its normal bundle, that's a local Calabi-Yau. Uh-huh. And now you want to know whether the normal bundle is negative, which you need in order to shrink it to a point. And then that restriction to these.
And then we get this fact, and this fact is then actually related, right? So there are no, it's like with the Kone fault, and there are no deformations which allow you to move this the Petsu surface. And it comes basically from the fact that this normal.
I mean, they do have deformations, and actually that's why I tend to object to just labeling them DPN, because once you get past n equal 4, you have moduli associated to moving the points around. And there are some limiting cases where you can let some points collide, and then you get the Dalpetsa surfaces with rational double point singularities. And you know, maybe that's a slightly broader class of examples, but that's about the only thing you can do.
But these moduli are not deformations of the Dalpetsa, they are deformations of the complex structure on the Dalpetsa.
I'm not sure what the distinction is between those two states.
It's not. They are not normal deformations of the Dalpetsa. Well, yeah.
They're closed string as opposed to open string, but that's the only distinction you can make at this point.
I mean, the cone of the Dalpetsa, that Calabi-Yau, has moduli, which includes varying the Dalpetsa, varying the points that are in the Dalpetsa.
That's true. If you do this open closed string discussion, it's really like this, that you cannot move the Dalpetsa inside the Calabi-Yau in some normal direction, because the normal holomorphic normal bundle has no...
The Calabi-Yau is fixed, the Dalpetsa doesn't move within the Calabi-Yau, but among the moduli include...
That's true, this is this subtle thing, I think, so, yeah. Okay. Well, so in our compact models, actually, Why should we decouple gravity? Okay, that you might ask. And the answer is there is no reason to do that in our cases. I mean, first of all, we don't have to make them small because gut coupling is quite large. It's not so far from gravity. And gut scale is quite large. It's not so far from gravity scale. But we use Dalpetsas for another reason. And this reason basically was now mentioned, namely that these Dalpetsa surfaces have no deformations, so they have no open moduli. You cannot move them around. There is no adjoint matter. Okay. However, this also allows us for DP9. Okay. So this is a space formerly known as Dalpetsa. Okay. So this is like the this is basically P2 blown up at 9 points, which then are not anymore in generic position. And it is not shrinkable, at least not to a point. But it's fine for our constructions, okay? It has no adjoint matter, okay? So why are the Dalpetsas? There's another thing why the Dalpetsas are unbelievably nice, because mathematicians like them very much, okay? So there's much known about the Dalpetsa surfaces. And first of all, we note that the number of two forms on a Dalpetsa surface of harmonic two forms are 1 plus n, so there's the anticanonical class, and then there are n additional classes, and these can be identified with the simple roots of this Lie algebra. Okay, and actually the intersection form is then the Cartan matrix of this Lie algebra. And now the interesting thing is that the geometry of lines on the Dalpetsa surfaces, so lines are P1s, right? P1s which intersect the anticanonical class exactly once, okay, is very well understood, or has been studied, and it's beautiful, okay? Namely, for example, on DP3 we have 6 lines. I can draw a nice picture here, and they intersect in this particular fashion. Of course, only 1, 2, 3 of them will be non-trivial in the Calabi-Yau. The other ones will be in the Dalpetsa, sorry, but the other ones will be related. Okay. In DP6, we will find 27 intersecting lines. I tried to find a nice picture, I was not
successful. There is a nice picture.
There is a nice picture, but I was not successful in implementing it. But so there are 27 lines on this. And then you know 27 is also the fundamental representation of the E6 group. So there are, the lines, the number of lines are intimately connected to the representations of the petzels. Okay. And that's one of the reasons why mathematicians have studied this in detail. So now the next question we want to ask is, what do we know about the petzels in compact Calabi-Yau manifolds? Okay. And the way how to generate the petzel in a compact Calabi-Yau manifold is we make a geometric transition, something which you know from the conifold transition, but in lower co-dimension. Okay. So what we do is we fix the complex structure of our space. So we have to fix a certain number of complex parameters in the complex structure deformation. We generate a singularity. So these singularities are well known, namely these are the petzel singularities. And then we can blow up and we pass in at the petzel surface. Okay. And probably the first place where this has been considered in string theory is this Del Pezzo transitions in this work, where we start with this degree 18 hypersurface in projective a weighted projective space. So this is just a generalization of some projective space where the coordinates can carry different weights and transform with different weights under the scalings. Okay, and what you see here is you take this Calabi-Yau manifold, the original one, okay, you fix some number of complex structural moduli, you see they go down, and you blow up the Del Pezzo, so you get one additional Kähler modulus. Okay, and another set of transitions, which I will also discuss in a moment, are the transitions in the quintic. They're actually, in some sense, more beautiful, as I will show you. Okay. Well, is that something which is inherited to these two examples? No, it's not. Right. So this is something which happens quite generically, and there exist whole chains of Del Pezzo transitions where you blow up more and more Del Pezzo surfaces, and the best method to study them is in toric geometry, and that's also what we did. Okay, and to give you a flavor of how this works, I want to discuss the transition of the quintic in the quintic hypersurface in a little bit detail. Okay. Okay, we start with the quintic in P4. Okay, what we do then is we generate a singularity in this polynomial, in this fifth order polynomial. And torically, this means we generate the singularity, and then we pass in this extra divisor. And torically, that means we add a certain divisor to the toric data of this P4. Okay. And what you can do then is you can compute the Euler characteristic and C1 square, so the square of the canonical class of this divisor, and you find certain numbers, okay, in this new Calabi-Yau manifold after the transition, and you see that these are exactly the right numbers for this to be the Del Pezzo surface. Okay. The next question you can ask is how many of these classes are of the classes of the Del Pezzo are trivial or non-trivial in the Calabi-Yau. Well, a very easy way to see it here is the number of Kähler moduli has just increased by one, so it can just be one class, namely the hyperplane class. That's a very simple way to see it, but it gives you not much insight about how to do the thing in general. Okay, but there is a whole theory of how to detect how many classes, so to say, are trivial or non-trivial. So you have to check precisely how the singularity looks like. And what you and how you can do that is basically you see you check the change of the Euler characteristic of the Calabi-Yau, and you see in this case it's actually 2 times the dual Coxeter number of E6, so it's 24, and this means that there is a whole E6 lattice inside the Calabi-Yau which is trivial in the Calabi-Yau and non-trivial in the Delpezzo. Okay. The other way how to do it, I also mentioned this, basically you can count curves in the homology class of this one non-trivial cycle. And you find, so this is a computation you do with a computer program, not by hand, and you find 27. Okay. Oh, but we have seen this number before, right? This 27 are precisely these lines on the Delpezzo, these 27 P1s. On the Delpezzo, and they are all sitting in the same cohomology class as the canonical class. Okay, so the whole E6 lattice is trivial in the new Calabi-Yau. Okay, so as I said, in this simple example, that would be probably a little bit too much to discuss, but we want to learn something more because we want to have intersecting brains, so we want to have intersecting Delpezzos. So we do not only generate one Delpezzo 6, but we continue this process. And in the second step, what we find is actually, we find 2 intersecting D7s. So we take, so this is a Delpezzo, this line here, and then we find 2 D7s which intersect on a P1. Okay? And we can continue and basically generate 3 intersecting DP8, okay, and then also with DP9 in principle, just by considering the toric geometry.
Sorry, why do you have to start with DP6? Why doesn't it look like DP2 often?
Well, is there a good reason why? I mean, it just comes out like this, right? I mean, you choose it.
I can give a reason. DP6 is the first one that's actually a hypersurface singularity.
Oh, yeah, that's
starting
true.
With a hypersurface Calabi-Yau, and you're trying to get a singularity, you'll only get a hypersurface singularity. You can get DP5 from a complete intersection, because that one's a complete intersection, but not a hypersurface. Yeah. DP4 and higher are not even complete intersections, so you would need more exotic Calabi-Yaus to find those Delpezzos. The Delpezzo is simpler, but the Calabi-Yau is more complicated.
So we will see in a moment that we can get DP2 and DP3, but you cannot get them by this blow-up procedure. We will have them as a base of some vibration. But of course, let's say, yeah. So the nice thing now, what we check is that the Euler characteristic changes always by 24. So even for these DP7 transitions and DP8, it changes by 24. So in fact, it's true that only an E6 lattice is trivial on the Delpezzos and non-trivial, non-trivial on the Delpezzos and trivial in the Calabi-Yau. Okay. So in these DP7 and E6 lattice is trivial, and we have enough space for our hypercharge flux, and that's precisely how we realize it. Okay. The next thing we have to do is we have to study involutions on the spaces. Okay, this would be now a rather interesting story, but I have to introduce much technicality again. So basically, you can picture that you can have involutions which just exchange this Delpezzo with this Delpezzo, and you can do that in toric geometry, and you can compute what is the fixed point set of this involution, and so on. Okay. So this was basically the first setup, and well, let me make one important remark. The important remark is, if you see this picture here, right, you would immediately say, wow, so now we just put brains here and we are done, because this was precisely the picture we had before. The point is now, it doesn't work that simple because we are in a compact setup. We cannot just place brains as we want them to be. I mean, we have to check that tadpoles are cancelled. So even if you have the right geometric figure in our picture, it doesn't mean that we can actually distribute the brains as we want to distribute them. And we actually found that our models, they are using this fact that it's so close, but one has to employ more devices in the compact space.
Tadpoles are canceled with purely local, with purely primitive objects, O planes and D planes, D7s, and no.
That's correct.
Theory.
Exactly. So tadpoles are cancelled here, and in the sense as I presented before, really by computing cohomology classes, and then we know the relations among them, and we can check if these numbers vanish. Yeah. So the next setup which I want to discuss are elliptic vibrations over TPR, and which now are transitions. So over the Lepezos are now transitions of this space. Okay, so this was discussed to some part also before. So in this case, we have another nice picture of what is going on. Namely, we have our Lepezo base, let's say our DP3 base, and then we have this sixth line. You remember there was this nice figure which I was picturing before. And if you now do an elliptic vibration over this, over each P1 here, there will be a DP9 sitting, okay? And they also intersect in this fashion, okay? So they intersect on the torus fiber. So these two TP9 will intersect on this torus, okay? And they will intersect the base in a P1, okay? Now we can check that there are actually 18 topological faces. Now what you can do is, so it's probably now only for the experts, but what you can do is you can flop away these P1s from the base, okay? At least three of them. And then these DP9s become DP8s, and you can decouple, so to say, the base from the fiber, and if these are DP8s, I can shrink them to a point. And that's how I can generate whole chains of transitions. And, well, the phase where all of them are DP8s, three of them are DP8s, then we can make the transition to the original space. Okay? And in this case, we have another way to study the orientifold involutions. Namely, if we understand the orientifold involution on the base, we understand how it will act, or we can extend it to the fiber. And you see that this del pezzo will be exchanged with another del pezzo. So for example, if I take this involution mapping this P1 to this P1, the DP9s will be also exchanged. Okay? So that's also a very nice way to basically construct now our intersecting brain model. Namely, we place our gut brains in the DP9 fibers and then consider these involutions. And we actually did something more. We classified all the involutions on the Lepezo surfaces, and it's a very nice tool to study these models, that to know what are the involutions in the subspaces compared to the toric ambient space. Okay, so then you have this simple picture that you have a gut brain, image gut brain. Okay, so we collected all the tools. I gave you the examples. Now, the nice thing is you can put these things together and try to impose them on several examples in these geometries which I presented. These are rather simple geometries if you consider the long list of Calabi-Yaus which are known. But remarkably, one gets very far with that. I mean, one can make them globally consistent, one can satisfy the D-term Suzy conditions, one can get the right gauge group, three chiral generations, no exotics. So I already told you like how this thing works, right? I mean, here we have to check that it's in the Kähler cone. All this we can do using our techniques. And we can also study the Higgs, just that we have just one vector-like Higgs pair, and then no adjoints, we ensured that by using that PET source, then we can have the gut breaking. So this was one of the stories which we definitely wanted to add, or which I stressed the most here in this talk. The gut breaking can be done and can be checked explicitly in compact Calabi-Yau's by switching on this U1Y flux. We can use we can address 3-2 splitting. I didn't talk about this. Phi-Wilson line on this genus 1 curves, and so on. And the Yukawa coupling, okay, it can be checked by can be addressed by the presence of an appropriate D3 instanton similar for Majorana masses. Okay. And the nice thing is we actually found models which satisfy all these criteria.
It's good.
Oh yeah, that's true. That's the third light from the bottom. You can. We have models where. That's true. There is tension. One has to work on for this. Yeah. I mean, there are these. Yeah, there are several tricks how to do that.
Wait, isn't there a problem also with 10-10 bar-10 bar couplings generated by instantons from on the Keter potential? Because those would lead to proton decay, so that the rather Klebanov-Witten proton decay calculation should get contributions from the same instantons.
No, not from the same instantons. It's a different charge. 10-10 bar-10 bar is.
It's an Keter potential. You use an instanton and think test. There's a lot of ways to generate stuff that looks like that.
You need to satisfy also vector like zero ones. This instanton, some other instanton vector, but yeah. Not the one that gives rise to the U color.
Okay.
Maybe some bound state or whatever. Yeah.
I'm just trying to make sure.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm a bit surprised about your last line because I remember that when Ralph had the talk some months ago, he was saying that models would say satisfy things but never all of the same.
Sorry. Yeah. Oh, wait a second. Yeah. Okay. Now you my punchline. Okay. So we found models which satisfy all criteria, but the problem is they don't satisfy them simultaneously. Okay. So we are coming close to setting. I mean, there is always like one or two or three things which cannot be satisfied. So should that worry us a lot? And the answer is probably no. First of all, there are precisely this question which we of course can discuss for a long time. Okay, so this has to be addressed. And the second thing is that look what we did. We started top down. You know, we started top down. We started with a specific Calabi-Yau manifolds which have maximally like seven Kähler moduli and a number of 200 complex structure moduli. So we had very simple, I mean the computations are nevertheless hard, but they are in the set of all Calabi-Yau manifolds, they are rather simple manifolds. And there are a lot of more examples, and my point of view is that we have basically checked that there is no principal obstruction of realizing these features with the stated remarks in mind concerning the coupling, Yukawa couplings, and so on. So what one can do is one can look for generalizations with more complicated PETSU configurations. Okay, that's something which one can do. The other thing is that we typically have very small D3 orientifold, D3 tetpoles. Okay, and this comes from the fact that look what we have. We have a quintic and a few del petzos. You can look at the divisors and the Euler characteristic of these divisors. They are all very small, right? And that's so the orientifold involutions will not induce very large tetpoles. Okay, so one can also look at more complicated orientifold involution. Let me come to the conclusion. So what I did is I discussed the construction of guts in type 2 B orientifolds many of the features in the local FCU mechanisms can be realized, in particular the gut breaking. And in addition, we found quite a bit new things which have been neglected in these local approaches. And in addition, we found that, well, which was clear, but that there are additional constraints, and that these additional constraints are not trivially satisfied, right? As people who worked on model building, of course, know it's not that simple to just place brains somewhere, okay? The thing which we heard about already, a few more things, and I guess Timo will discuss in the next week maybe, is the generation of additional couplings by instantons. So I mentioned this. And the nice thing is, or one of the important things is, that we have actually construction of non-trivial Calabi-Yau manifolds. So this is not a torus, this is an actual Calabi-Yau manifold. They are compact and orientifolds of these spaces with intersecting Delbezos and other rigid surfaces. We can determine all we need for the model building explicitly, and we can construct globally consistent D-brain configurations. We can study the D-brains, so the substructure of the devices we can also study. We can switch on the appropriate bundles and to get the spectrum of the four-dimensional gauge theory. We can discuss the gut breaking. And they actually are quite appealing from a phenomenological point if you consider the space of models which have been constructed in compactifications with intersecting brains. Namely, they have an MSS scan Kyrus spectrum, they can have no exotics, and so already these models are quite nice, okay? One should not hope for the ultimate model in this from this construction yet, okay? Of course, what are the open problems? To my belief, it is nice to study the orientifolds further, and that it would be nice to go closer to the setups which we actually want to have. But interesting open problem is to lift these things to compact gut models on F theory, gut models in F theory. So actually construct the Calabi-Yau fourfold, which has a similar thing in it, or maybe some new construction. But I think that's actually a very important way to go. And I also believe that the top-down approach, and I think this program here shows it, is in some sense easier to address, because you basically you're setting up the things right from the set, and if you are clever, you start with something which has promising features at the end. If you want to extend something local to something global, this is usually very complicated, to my belief, because basically, here you at least you know that it's consistent right from the start, right? Okay. And of course, since we are now in a compact scenario, we can address something like moduli stabilization and Suzy breaking. Okay, this is harder in the local scenarios, because even if you do gauge mediation, you always have to ensure that you are not eventually screwed, so to say, by gravity effects, right? If you embed it in something global. I mean, one challenge of gauge mediation is to control the other effects in the setup. Yeah? So this you can do in these scenarios, and I think there are many beautiful open questions how to combine this with this huge literature on moduli stabilization in type 2B, with the question of having throats, right, to warp down scales to generate hierarchies. And I think that, we will hear quite a bit more about those kind of setups. Thanks a lot.
There was in the F theory picture, the unification was not exactly on the nose for the gauge couplings.
That's true. So
happening also, you have the same thing happening here.
So yeah, so there was basically Ralph Blumenhagen was examining the gauge coupling unification in these setups. Okay, since we are at weak string coupling, we can use something like the Chan-Simons actions and von Infeld action to determine what are the leading gauge couplings. Okay, and what you find is that of course the hypercharge flux will contribute differently to different gauge couplings. Okay, so if you the leading gauge coupling is just determined by the volume of this four cycle, but then there are corrections which go with the dilaton and are the induced three main charges, right? And there are terms which look like this, F terms, which come from the fluxes on the brains. But now the hypercharge flux is seeing these differently from different brains, okay? So there appears to be kind of a problem. The problem is that there is no actual gauge coupling unification, because basically you're on a higher dimensional theory. And the explanation for this was then of the form that it was said that, okay, there is a threshold, okay? There is a threshold, which is before the gut scale, and there are actually states becoming light, which you have to take into the running of the couplings. And these states are precisely these three two states in these 3-2 exotics. And then if you take them into the running, this split looks exactly like this split. Okay? So that's so to say how the thing is self-consistent and takes care of this. However, then it turned out, well, maybe we can do something more. I mean, maybe we can restore unification. And one way to restore unification would be to switch on another bundle, which exactly mimics these effects and basically ensures that they are unifying in the guts at gut scale, so that unification is restored, that you have essentially another term which basically ensures that this doesn't happen, this split. So this artificial unification has been considered before, I believe. I mean, where you think it unifies, but then there's a threshold, and that's why it's screwed up. And of course, switching on additional bundles and trying to restore unification is probably even the more elegant way to treat the problem. Okay. But it's definitely an issue. And there was the time where people were trying to use this effect to explain 4% deviations and so on. But it turned out that it's the wrong sign, and so it cannot be used to make this connection.
Okay, well,